You are all weirdos.
Weird science is the revolution. Weird science is the revolution.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Weird Science Marvel Comics podcast. I'm here with my man, Matt. What up, Matt?
What up, Jim?
What up? And we are at episode 30. That is, I think, 30. That is the legacy number, 530. And we are going to have a couple new books here on the show. And then kind of an old one that, I don't know, there's some weird ones this week. And but we'll get right into it as we always do. And I had said on my preview show that I do over on the YouTubes, the books that I was looking forward to, and one of the ones I said I'm really looking forward to, I was curious about this new Deadpool, Deadpool number one by Cody Ziegler, hoping that he wouldn't go full out, I'm a funny guy, Cody Ziegler, and, you know, kind of have nonsense going on. He doesn't quite do that. I'll give him credit. The problem is that it's a boring issue, and it's a number one issue, and by the end, I was just bored, and I don't quite get it, but I'll give you the credits here, and then I'll ask you what you thought. It's Deadpool number one, written by Cody Ziegler, art by Roger Antonio, colors by Guru Effects, letters by VC's Joe Sabino. Now, it is a new number one, so there's not really a recap, though. When you get into it, it does deal a lot with what was Alyssa Wong's run that ended recently that I don't know that a lot
that
of
was
people
surprising,
even
honestly.
Read. Yeah, I just thought, and Deadpool is the perfect character that if you're going to do a new run, you can just start.
Well, especially with the new movie coming out, you'd think they'd want to kind of reset to the status quo a little bit.
Deadpool had a girlfriend and has this symbiote dog, and that continues here, though he's kind of a sad sack, and that's what threw me off. You know, his former lover doesn't have them anymore, and he's sad about that, but he has the symbiote dog, and that's pretty much all you get. You don't get much more than sad sack, you know, Wade, who wants to figure out and get his groove back while he's trying to be, you know, a dad to his symbiote fur puppy here or whatever. I actually even thought it was a cat at first, but he says it's a dog. I don't know. I really don't know about this. As I said, it's a little oversized because it's a number one, but I just found it pretty boring. And when there were times, didn't you see parts where you thought there was a joke, but you don't know because it wasn't funny? Because that happened to me a lot.
Well, I was reading the first page, like, I thought, man, he's going to go over the top with the fourth wall stuff. He doesn't really do any of that, which is probably a good thing, but
yeah, isn't it weird? Like, I'll give him props that he didn't go that crazy.
He kind of gets props for that.
But he didn't have a story. Because usually, and I said on that previous show, the two characters that always pop up in my mind are Deadpool and Harley Quinn. Uh-huh. That when people want to write them, they're like, oh man, I have to Deadpool this up. And that would be fourth wall breaking jokes, references. Harley Quinn, same thing. That when they get to the end of it, you're like, well, all you did was joke around and do crazy things. We didn't get a story. Now, in this, again, he doesn't do that quite as much. We still don't get much of a story because he is just pretty much reminiscing about the last run.
It's all about the last run. Like, we almost had a family. It's too late for us. All I want is money now, all this stuff.
And never really explaining that, like, as if that was the greatest run ever. And everybody's down with that, so that we're all like, oh my God. Like, it's almost like in this first issue, Cody Ziegler is apologizing for that other run being canceled, so that he has to keep saying. And like you said, it is like, what was me? Oh man, I don't have my groove here. I don't really like doing this. I don't. Oh man, I kind of got my groove back now that I stabbed the guy. Let's get the money. Even though at the beginning, you start with them going to get the money. They're in Canadian airspace. And even then, you're going to not even like tell jokes, but almost like put the French part of the French Canadian Quebec on blast.
Oh man, he's out for blood with those guys, man.
Yeah,
oh my
and
God.
I don't know that many people are really into the idea of that whole, you know, in Quebec, French Canadians, but they don't like the French here. Or that's what he doesn't like and whatever. And it doesn't feel like anything that I'm like, oh, classic Deadpool. It just feels like he's like railing in on that in a weird way, because him and also I will point out too that the symbiote dog kind of does a lot of the work for Deadpool as well.
It does.
Right? So yeah. That even throws me off. And it does talk, and you know, you have a Deadpool, and a lot of times when you have a singular character, like the Punisher even, or maybe even like a Daredevil at points, you'll get a lot of narration. And it's because they're usually by themselves, and some writers, you know, might not want that. So in this, you get the symbiote dog and still get a lot, like everything is still going on, still a lot of narration, and then just little comments. And the symbiote dog says, like, right here, Papa, me eat things, Papa. Can I do this, Papa? And I'm like, what's happening? Because I kept waiting for a joke. I kept waiting for not even a laugh. I was waiting for a smile. The art's pretty good. It's okay. You know, it's nothing crazy. Even at that, you have references in this. You get a Chainsaw Man reference. If you're a manga or anime fan, you might get a kick out of it. But it's done in a weird way that really comes out of nowhere. And it's very specific to not Chainsaw Man, but the character Aki in the Chainsaw Man, which is now a deep dive. And I think that a lot of people won't even know what's going on in that. And it, by the end, it feels to me as a Chainsaw Man fan that I do get the reference of, oh, you're just trying to grab on to that. You're trying to grab that clout here. And it just felt forced in. You said you didn't even know what the hell it was.
No, I mean, I was assuming you would tell me on this.
Yeah, and for me to actually explain it,
I don't think you could. I think Jason, our buddy in the Slack there, put a picture which kind of explained it.
Like almost a ripoff of the thing. Like
it's panel for panel ripoff.
But in this, he at points is worried that he doesn't know, you know, how to say you're all about to die in Quebecois. One of the jokes, it seems, because they're there to kill a guy. They're going through his bodyguards, not even having any problem because you have a symbiote dog that's eating everybody.
It's just eating everybody, yeah.
You know, and then you'll get a guy who's going to, you know, try to blow them up. And really, you try to set up things in this like, oh my God, they just blew off Deadpool's arm. It grows back before you realize it even grew back. So it's there for a joke. And he's like, almost like the, hey, lend me a hand joke. And then later he's like, man, I don't have a better joke. Even at that, his jokes in this, they're pretty bad, right? I mean, they're really, right?
Yeah, they're pretty bad. And like the one thing I actually wanted to see was this guy has this like cool flamethrower thing that he's about to burn him with. And then he gets eaten before he gets to use it. I was kind of disappointed. I wanted to see the flamethrower thing.
And even that, he goes, hey, you ever seen Chainsaw Man? And he's doing the move that Aki does in the book. And like, yeah. If the guy said, oh, yeah, I love it. Like, it's not really that great.
It's my favorite anime or something.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, oh, I love that. Why? Why are you saying that? Oh, no. Like, it's just, and just, I'm telling you, the jokes are really bad. At one point, this guy they're going after, who's so generic. I mean, this guy is generic beyond belief. Mm-hmm. Where they have to kill him. We don't even really know why. He's got all this money. He's got a mansion. And he's desperately, while this is happening, trying to put all this money in this bag of his.
What was he yelling about? Some Hammer Space bag?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, what is that joke?
It's like he yells, fake Amazon
come
bag?
Come on, maybe? You stupid piece of crap. I knew I shouldn't have bought a Hammer Space bag from a guy in an alley. That I think
what's
is
Hammer
a
Space?
Is that a joke?
I don't know.
Maybe we're not fancy enough. But even then, like, I don't know. And that's the joke. And then Deadpool shows up and says, I'm going to get you. This guy somehow makes portals. He jumps through portals. Now we're going to have Deadpool jump through portals and get his arm cut off and his legs cut off. But again, it doesn't really matter. It's just there as kind of a joke. And in that, you end up, and I'm like, when you have this kind of nonsense, and then you have Deadpool get on what is almost like a big giant symbiote lion. It looks like a one. Like, and you're not even going to do a Neverending Story reference. I mean, you blew it. You blew it. You ended up forcing in a Chainsaw Man reference, but you don't even have him on the back of this symbiote with, you know, yeah. With
I mean,
going
that exactly
like,
looks like a Neverending Story.
It looks exactly like it.
And that's the references that he would be making,
yes,
80s, early 90s
references.
That would be
his deal.
That's
so instead,
it.
He does a so much on the money ripoff of Chainsaw Man, but when you get something that you don't have to spell it out. Also, I have to say that the one other reason in this, Cody Ziegler does seem like he wants to explain every little joke as well. Like everything is explained too much. Everything goes like too long. Like the whole Canadian deal and the Quebecy, like it just is too much and it's not that funny. And so what happens is this guy keeps opening up portals. And you have a spread page that isn't that impressive, but yet on the page it says, I'd hate to be the artist that has to draw this. It's not anything that's even like, oh my God, you got to see this.
It could have been a really cool moment, but was not because it wasn't anything going on.
These portals are going, so it's like jumping through and he's on, this is where he's on. And even at that one point, as he is yelling, I hate to be that artist. He actually even has his hand up like he should be doing the never ending story. But there's not even any clever things because the portal's there and he's just going down. It's just one long thing. It's not
also,
even that crazy.
When you go through the portal, sometimes you get chopped in half, but not other times.
It seems like when he went through that we did, and the art didn't really play out, that the portal was closing as he went through. I think that, but it never showed that.
Yeah.
And he got his legs cut off. By the time they are halfway through the spread page, which is only a page away from when he got him cut off, you can see that he has his legs back already and then just starts running. I mean,
oh, yeah,
that's
back.
The thing. Yeah, they're back.
It should take him a week or 2 weeks to regrow those bad boys.
It should take him beyond the issue we're in.
Yes.
You have to have this mean something. Even at one point, you have the guy who we thought would be almost like a G.I. Joe type guy. With the big flamethrower, it's like, I want to see that grow back. Well, wait a panel, dude, because you'll see it. And so you have all this going, and then the last portal that, because here's the thing, too. The symbiote going with him is way too overpowered, just eats everybody. And now you have to get somewhat of a story, so Cody Ziegler has to leave the symbiote dog aside. There's no reason. Deadpool says, I'm going to go through this portal. You stay here. And it just happens that that's, you know, the last portal where this guy ended up running into this crazy looking guy. I like the design, but looks like a magic user type deal. Mm-hmm. You know, almost the mummy, has a bunch of all that going on that has somehow killed the guy that we never really
I hadn't
knew.
Even noticed that he killed him there. I just see that for the first time here.
Everything means nothing here. It's really that bad.
I don't care about that guy. Just
yeah.
Some weird dude
with
like portals.
The Iron Yuppie. That's what he was. But
yeah,
and we didn't even know what it was. He was just sent there to kill him, and he wanted
just
money.
For the record, so we don't look like clowns, a Hammer Space bag is an extra-dimensional bag. So basically, you can just throw a bunch of stuff in there, and it's like a Doctor Who kind of thing.
So what happened is he ended up buying that from – but why would he – the guy has rows and rows of money, but he bought it in an alley.
Yeah.
That's not a joke. Again,
and he can use the portals. Why not throw the money into the portals?
Yeah, that's true. Like, it doesn't work. Well, at least you looked it up. At least we're, yeah. Even so, I hope that people wouldn't be like, oh my God, there's dummies.
You never know.
They didn't know what a Hammer Space bag was. So Deadpool sees the guy he was going to go get. He's dead. Now, in my mind, I thought he was going to say, hey, thanks a lot. Can I have the body now? Because I need evidence. I want to get paid. The guy's dead. That's all you have to do. He's been paid to kill him. Hey, can I like, no. He just starts like, oh man, you cost me this. And do you know how much it costs to feed a 2-ton alien goo dog?
Apparently a lot of dead humans that he eats. That's what it
costs.
Yeah,
I don't think he'd be that hungry after this.
No.
So Deadpool attacks him, and this guy is big on killing people. You know, that seems to be his thing maybe, but we don't really know why or what. His name is Death Grip. We'll find out later, which is kind of a cool, very much a Liefeld kind of name. So I don't mind that. But he like runs through Deadpool, kind of like crushes him from, you know, and actually hits him from the front. But then Deadpool ends up having a weird deal where he says, here's a joke line, because Deadpool doesn't die and this guy's intrigued. But Deadpool jumps up because the guy's like, oh, man, I thought you were more than that. Oh, well, I'll get out of here. Deadpool gets up and stabs him through the back, and he says, know how rude it is to blow a fella's back out without saying goodbye? Well, it's downright un-Canadian, if you ask me. Like, that's a big joke.
Yeah, I kind of get two meanings on that. There's some sexual stuff going on
with
that, too.
Yeah, a little bit of it. Well, it was, but it's not funny.
No, it's not funny, and it's just dumb.
It pretty much is the idea of like, yeah, you know, why are you going to buy me a drink first?
Yeah,
like that sort of thing. But it's not that fun.
It's literally blowing the back out, and then the other thing too.
Yeah,
it's kind of dumb.
Even then, like it just didn't even flow right. But he impales the guy.
And also, Deadpool got chopped in half basically, and then he's back up, and within seconds,
he gets up and stabs the guy. And this guy, Death Grip, is like, ooh, this is pretty exciting. Somebody who can't die. You're very interesting. I'll check up on you later. As Deadpool escapes somehow, because, you know, he went through a portal at first, but now he's just going to throw grenades and end up walking out of a building. and he's there just sitting there, and that's where you end up, where the symbiote dog find him. Then he gets a call from Gal from Miles deal, the one who was running the Cape Killer stuff, says, hey, I need you on our, you know, kill team. And Dimple goes, no, I don't want to be in that. That's just there. You said it's funny. It's to make the Ziggler verse, the Cody verse.
Nobody's asking for that.
Nobody's asking for this. And it goes on too long. Deadpool says, I thought while I was impaling that nice young goth man, this is the most fun I've had in ages. And you end up having the dog say, it was nice. Felt like he wasn't there. He wasn't there at that point. Then at the end, you just have this guy, death grip, and I'm going to go after that Deadpool, bit by the bing, and it's over. Not good.
Yeah.
It's not funny. We'll probably give it one more issue, maybe, but, you know, I don't
Depending
know.
On what comes out that week.
I don't want anything to do with it, and that's it. But what would you give this?
Four.
I'm going to give it four as well. I like that you have issue one, and it has to tell you that it's to be continued. That always makes me laugh.
We don't need it right now. Take a little break. The movie's coming out. That movie is going to be freaking huge. It's like, just let that kind of, and have a book that actually feeds off of that to elevate Deadpool rather than whatever this is.
He's just a sad sack through this whole thing. That's what kind of gets me, and it needs to get away from that last run because nobody was reading that. But yeah, 4 out of 10 from both of us, but we'll move on to the next book. And the next book is Doctor Strange number 14, written by Jed MacKay, art by Pasquale Ferry, colors by Heather Moore, letters by VC's Corey Petit. You have, it's crazy, but Doctor Strange with his crew of Hunter's Moon, Black Cat, and Taskmaster are locked into the game Cobalorum. It's more of a tabletop role-playing game. They are there, and at the end of last issue, they were confronted by the Game Master. Or as they like to say in here, because I don't know if that is trademark, the Master of the Game. He yells, I'm like, it's Baron Mordu. And when you go through this, like, things just kind of happen. And then at the end, I guess the best thing I can say is, well, that was an inoffensive 2 issues because you needed to fill some space before we get to Blood Hunt.
Space filler, yep. Inoffensive space filler.
If I go with that, then I do kind of have to mention that the issue before was the Bats issue that ended up being kind of filler as well. But again, if you end up not coordinating things and you have this big event, and you have 3 issues isn't a trade, so you have to end up probably fixing that in before you get to it. I get it. It's just that at the end of this, you almost feel like Doctor Strange is just going to say to everybody, time out. I know this isn't that good, so let's just finish this. Let's get out of here. And that's what you kind of do. It really does kind of fall apart. Me and you both like the art. I think the cover is great. Cover looks fantastic.
Yeah, Alex Ross has done all
Alex
the covers.
Ross, yeah, the covers are great. This book, we said it the last time, we keep saying it, it felt like it ended. After the General Strange whole thing wrapped up, it felt like that this whole thing ended and that we were going to come back to it later. It said, thanks a lot, everybody. We'll see you down the road. And then there was an issue the next week. And I actually have to mention, I said because I forgot the issue with Clea's adventures in babysitting of her new younger sister. We had that as well. So we actually had 4 issues. That seemed to be like, let's not do too much. Let's get to this. There's rumors that there's going to be a change. There's going to be a status quo deal. A lot of people said Dr. Doom because of the timeless stuff. Who knows? But something's going on that they don't want to tell any other real stories, at least before Blood Hunt or possibly after. I don't know. We're in this role-playing game. Mordo is the master of the game. You end up having Doctor Strange at this point, and I forgot that he was actually separate. He was fighting a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
A dragon that ends up being the personification of the game.
Yep.
While the game is being played by Mordu with Taskmaster and Hunter's Moon, end up having Black Cat running around doing nothing, especially not looking great, because they ended up getting in these, what they claimed were like fantasy outfits, but they're not. They don't look great. And that's one of the things.
Taskmaster's looks pretty cool. All the other ones are kind of lame.
Hunter's Moon is just in a bunch of robes because he was the quote unquote priest. I would have made Taskmaster look more like Skeletor fully.
Doctor Strange looks like Serpentor.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, you know what the thing is that threw me with Doctor Strange is every time you go back to him, I had to realize it was him because he looks like a villain.
Yeah, I know.
When you go to him, and it threw me off. And then when you end up seeing Black Cat, who you did nothing with, I forgot it was her.
Yeah.
And then you see her and like, oh, and she even says at one point, man, I'm a 10 and you didn't recognize. Well, no, not with that outfit.
No.
You look terrible. So in all of this, remember the big setup. Clea wanted to go. You can't go. There's rules. We have to have a fighter, a priest, a magic user, and a thief. These are the rules of the game. But you never did anything with this. You never really did anything with anything until, like, what you end up doing by the end is having Black Cat say, I'm a thief. Look, I stole the book. That's it.
She was doing stuff in the background, but you never see any of it.
Yeah, you never saw. And a lot of times what I think is fun in this is, first off, you end up getting characters that normally wouldn't team up are forced to, but you never really got that. And you get the one joke, might be better than the Cody Ziegler in this week's Deadpool, but the idea of, oh, no, my friends and Taskmaster. You keep saying that.
Yeah.
Okay. But you get, usually in these things, what I like is that you learn a little something about a character that you wouldn't ever be able to learn. Like, all of a sudden we find out, because Black Cat starts calling everybody nerds. Get me out of this. I would have loved if she was able to solve something using role-playing game logic. And then they're like, how do you know? And she's like, well, I dated this one nerd, you know, thing. And actually means Peter. Like, something like that. That you even
that
see
work.
Her and Peter playing a role-playing game. And she's, like, so bored. But she like, but that's usually what you get in these. Like, you have to play the logic of the game and somehow you figure it out and go. But this just ends up being kind of nothingness. While Doctor Strange, talking to this dragon, realizes that it's kind of being used by Mordo, but it doesn't work for me because this has been an evil game since the 80s. Doctor Strange said he's been trying to take it down. Like, everything kind of twists and turns to kind of be nothing. But if you want to like it, maybe look at it as almost like the 80s Dungeons and Dragons cartoon. Maybe that's
it's a lot play. Like that. Yeah.
It's not great. The story is kind of paper thin, but maybe. But I really wanted to have more fun with the characters. And at points, it almost feels like Jed MacKay is stuck between wanting to have fun, wanting to tell a story about, like, control and things like that with the game and trying to make the game, you feel sorry for the game. It's very odd. But as we're going, and we'll do this.
What was that? What was that
last
arcade game that used to be that you would have to choose what he was going to do?
Gauntlet. That's
It was like animated.
Dragon Slayer.
Dragon Slayer.
There you go. Yeah, it does feel like that. Like,
looks
make
like
some. I guess if you make a Dragon Slayer joke, or if you even made, like I said, Gauntlet, all of a sudden it's like Black Cat needs food. Like, maybe I'd giggle, but maybe not anybody
would
know what that means. But I'd kind of giggle. Again, usually what happens in these, I keep saying, you figure out, okay, the way that we do this is to finish the game. The way that we do this is by following the rules or then going against the rules of this. You never get to that. What you end up doing is Doctor Strange finding out this dragon wants to just play the game and it's desperate. It ended up capturing kids. Whether or not that has to do with Mordo or not, I don't know. And then at the end, hey, how about I find somebody to play the game with you? Almost like a War Games type deal. I'll find somebody to play the game with you. In the meantime, out of nowhere, it just suddenly you just have a game world. It's not really spelled out that suddenly they're in the game, but it's only Taskmaster and Hunter's Moon that
they're
going to battle.
Yeah, they're like in different environments, like Egypt kind of thing.
It didn't play out, right? And that would make sense for, you know, Hunter's Moon, but...
But I don't know what Taskmaster's got going on.
Yeah, and they're just like, they're both
pirate
kings, and they're going to fight. But what? How did we get here? And it's, again, like I said, you can figure out what's going on because nothing is really going on. And then as they were going to fight, you end up just Black Cat just yoinks and grabs the book from Mordo because he's the master of the game. Now she has the book, we can change it, and they just end up leaving. They just leave the game then with Doctor Strange telling this dragon personification of it, you can't have the kids. So we go out of it, and Mordo's there, the kids are there, they all get sent home, and the kids definitely look to me like that Dungeons & Dragons cartoon type thing. They're going to be sent home, right? So what you do then is punch Mordo in the face and throw him into the Crypt of Shadows mirror. which then we have Bats in there because Bats got trapped in there with the snakes by vampire brother of Doctor Strange a couple issues ago. But that's not really a great connective tissue where Mordo's like, I got to find my way out of here. And Bats says, well, good luck, buddy. And then from there, we go where Doctor Strange, like, are we supposed to think this is a good move? Doctor Strange, who saved General Strange, his self from the future different dimension deal that has fought wars all this time.
Yeah.
We were worried that he was going to go a little wonky, but he's kind of saved him.
Just hanging out.
Brought him to the mansion. He's hanging out. Why would you pretty much seems to dupe him into getting stuck in the game? He says, hey, you like...
This will keep him busy.
Isn't it the weird thing? He's like, hey, you like them games, do ya? I'm like, how, what? He's like, hey, it's a strange creature, but are you not familiar with those? You could go for another one. When was the last time you played a game, General?
About 4,000 years,
Doctor. Yeah, he's like, what? What are you talking about? Next thing, he's done. And then Doctor Strange even says, like, offhandedly, like, oh, I took care of that. Like, you're a jerk.
Yeah, another crisis solved, my demented alternative self.
He fought to get this General Strange back here so that he could get help, and now he's thrown him into a game that's like a fantasy world that'll probably die in.
He's probably going to, yeah, or that, or he's going to take it over and come back and crazier than ever.
Crisis solved, to me, is that the editors came and said, that character sucks. Like, he can't, like, we liked the thing, but it all fell apart. So now he's just wandering around the whole deal. Why? He just gets put in the game. And then at one point, you know, Doctor Strange is so good with Bats the dog that he says, now, where in all the hells did my dog go? And then forgets about that a panel later. He's not looking. Ay, ay, ay. And the next thing it's like, oh no, what's that? Blood hunt.
Oh, no, he's right.
Yeah. Really, it's like, next, you must read Bloodhunt. I don't know what sort of magic you're trying to pull here, but it ain't working on me. We'll probably review the main book, but please.
I don't even know when that comes out. I'm trying to figure it out, but...
Yeah, and it says, you must read Bloodhunt number one, then come back next month for Strange versus Vampires. I'm like, boy, this wasn't a great two-parter here. It really just was nothing. It's, again, it's not anything that was like, oh my God, that was... It's written okay. The transition of Hunter's Moon and Taskmaster being in the game world just did not make any sense because they were already in the game world. Everything just fell apart. You never really played the tropes up like you should have. And then we end and it's just ending and you realize I just wasted two issues on the story. But the art was pretty cool. Cartoony. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Blood Hunt. But what would you give it?
I'm still enjoying the art. Story's a little, it is what it is. I'd give it a 6.5.
Yeah, I'm like a 5.5. Yeah. It's just like down the
It's harmless to me. I mean, it's just...
It is harmless. But if you're reading this book, you've had four issues that have been pretty harmless.
Would this be collected in a trade or they would just skip it until it gets back to something good?
I don't.
Does everything
weird.
Have to be in a trade? I don't even know.
Yeah. You're saying like you come out of trade and people are like, what happened to issue?
Well, to me, it collects a story, and this doesn't really fit into anything. So,
yeah, I guess this would. This might be its own trade. Like, who's buying this trade?
What would the title of it be? Nonsense. Filler issues. Yeah.
Doctor Strange, a boat full of nonsense. Yeah. Like, and you'd have like people would be fooled because it's like, oh man, this looks like role playing. You have all this. I'm like, no. What you got was Adventures in Babysitting with Clea's newborn young sister. Then we go into Bats the dog who gets trapped, and then two issues of a role playing game that really, like you said, harmless but didn't do anything, nothing at all. So yeah, that's a great trade.
Mm-hmm.
I did see somebody who was talking one point. It might have been like a Jimmy Palmiotti or somebody was talking of the idea of like, movies end up grabbing older stories. Like, what's happening in 10, 15, 20 years from now when these are the stories they're grabbing? Like, it's going to be trouble. But there you go. Yeah. There you go. We'll be seeing him next against vampires. So maybe that'll be better. Maybe he could have used General Strange for that. That would be pretty cool, right?
They could have used General Strange in the game, I think, too.
I just think the idea that because... His vampire brothers, well, that fits Blood Hunt, so yep. We got to get rid of General Strange because people
fit.
Say, like you, because you like to, where is he? What's he doing?
True.
So you just put him there. He's in the book now. He's in the game. I don't even know how that worked. How they even...
And what are we even looking at that that signifies Blood Hunt? It's just a billow of smoke?
Like, didn't you think like a smoke pillar and then there should be bats coming out the side?
It better not be a vampire skyscraper or something where they live.
Maybe.
That's going to be really annoying.
It's funny. He looks out and he's like, is that that limbo embassy nobody talks about? Like, I think it is. He's like, I'm going to go and ignore that like I've been. Closes the curtains, goes to the other deal, and all of a sudden there's a vampire. Oh my God, Blood Hunt.
They're trying to get people to go back to New York into their offices, and they look out their window and they see that. Good luck.
Yeah, that limbo embassy doesn't really do much for the property value. Oh my goodness. But then again, you look out and like occasionally, almost like as a kid when you're trying to get that like, you know, the Skinamax deal, like between channels, you may look out and end up seeing Madeline Pryor once in a while, and that makes up for it. Like, okay, well, and then you look out and you're like, oh no, I see some of those other nonsense people. But with that, we will move to the last book me and you are going to be talking about. And that book is Spider-Man Shadow of the Green Goblin, number one, written by J.M. DeMatteis, Michael Stah or Stay, period, Maria on art. I like the art.
I'm
not aware of this artist. After I saw in my previous show about it, I went and looked up some things and he had some pretty cool art. And in this, he does a really good retro style, not really the style of art that I saw that he normally does. I will say that in a lot of the art he does online, he likes to draw bosoms is what he likes to draw. Just putting it out there, he draws that a lot. Colors by Chris Sotomayor and DC's Joe Caramagna on letters. This is DeMatteis. Kind of going back, it's different than some of the other books that do this, like the Peter David stuff and whatnot. This is going back to before Norman Osborn is the Green Goblin. You end up having Peter has just become Spider-Man and Uncle Ben has just died. But to me, it doesn't fit in that way that the others are. Okay, I want to tell more of the story or I want to finish this story. It's just kind of going back and giving you a story so far about the proto-goblin, the guy who was Niels Van Adder, who ended up was experimented on by Norman before he perfected or somewhat perfected the Goblin Serum. So you get that, and it's kind of a weird play. I don't mind this. I thought it was pretty good, though it dragged a little because there's a lot of narration, and I don't know why J.M. DeMatteis went with this.
Yeah.
Because of the idea of, he says, like, what you need to do, I mean, you do at the beginning. Hey, everybody, it's me, Peter Parker. I want to tell you a story from my past. And goes through a lot into saying some of this is what I remember. Some of it is some other people's memory. And some of it might be completely made up. But let's go and do it. I think the narration, for the most part, for the issue, should stop there. It should then go and tell the story. And yeah, when we're jumping between things, obviously, when you're going to say, okay, my parents died. Then I end up getting bit by a spider. I was a jerk. And then Uncle Ben. That's fine, too. Like, when you get to that. But at that point, I think you pull the narration out because what you end up doing is every page, it almost feels like Peter telling the story can't stop and let the story take. It's like he has to butt in. It feels like it is butting in, right?
It is, because it interrupts the dialogue bubbles and it kind of throws off the pacing for me, because I'm having to figure out, am I reading this or am I reading this, or do I read this first or this second?
And maybe, like, sometimes when they do the narration, you'll have a little spider there. So, no, it's weird to not, because the way it's played out, there are times when a narration bubble overlaps on a, you know, a word bubble, and you're not sure who's talking.
Yeah, that's the letterer's job to place the bubbles. So it's a lot of that.
Yeah, and even the bubbles themselves, maybe a harder square. We rarely talk about letters, right? But the narration, it's like a soft rectangle. It's kind of, it does have a little bit of an outline of red, but not
maybe not a white background, a different color.
Yeah,
would work.
Maybe like have a, I don't know, but something. But also, when you're reading a comic just naturally and you're going from left to right and you read a word bubble, you kind of want to get to the other word bubbles in that conversation without having to run into narration boxes. The narration boxes should be, you know, above, below, whatnot.
Yeah, they're in the mix.
ends up right there in the mix. And like I said, it really does feel like it's butting in. And because, and I'll tell you how I realized that it really was kind of taking me out of the whole deal is now that we're talking about it, I'm looking, I didn't recognize in that first scene all the rats that are in the scene.
Yeah, I just saw that too. It's disgusting. They're everywhere.
Because I was reading the narration that's all on the top, along with the word bubbles, and just kind of going, seeing that you have this guy, Niels Van Adder, proto-goblin, he's already been turned, just almost looks like the Red Hulk, even at this point, or a demon. And he has this phony family that he set up mannequins.
They're like mannequins, yeah, creepy.
Eating this food that is rotten and stuff like that. But we're not going to go full out into this whole deal, but you do feel bad for this Niels, this proto-goblin. He's had everything snatched away from him by Norman, and he wants revenge. That's a lot. Now, there is somebody on the outskirts in the shadows that's involved as well that wants to get back at Norman as well. And we'll get to that by the end. But in the meantime, you do kind of go through some greatest hits of Spider-Man. And you go and see, you know, that he needs money because Aunt May and him, they're not really talking about things because they don't want to bring stuff up that upset each other. Aunt May has a lot of bills piling up. Peter, he wants to, you know, make some money, but the wrestling's kind of gone. And now that J. Jonah Jameson has declared him a menace and the Daily Bugle, nobody will hire him to do anything. And this is pre-Peter, you know, taking pictures and things like that because it's very quick over there. So there's some fun things. Like he goes off to Maxie Schiffman, his agent. You know, there's some callback deals, right? So he goes and he's like, man, you know, son, nobody wants you in this town, but I'll get you something. He gets him a job to do a birthday party. And when you get to that point, this kid is kind of a jerk. Kid, they say he's 10. The art there looked like he was a little older, but still, he's like, this kid, you're not the real Spider-Man. You just have a costume on, and Peter's trying to do all these things. I swear, at one point, Peter lifts a car, and the kid's like, oh, man, that's a cardboard car.
You try it.
Yeah, have him go over. Or have it that it's their car, the family's car. Like, do that. Even have the mother, oh, my God. Well, the kid's acting out, and you find out that the kid's dad had just died. Peter feels bad and starts zipping him around town, you know, possibly killing him by the end. But there's nice things in this.
Gets him, throws him from the top of a building.
Yeah, just throws him.
This is what you get for questioning.
Yeah,
me,
really. This is what you get. Or he's starting to plan, like, look, I've been trying to get this trick where you fall off this bridge and then I zip you and catch you.
I save you at the last second.
Mm, his neck breaks. He's like, oh no, I better not do that later with Gwen
Peter
Stacy.
Comes back and gets the mom's number.
Exactly. I thought the mom was hitting on him. But so you have all this going on. And then at the end, he doesn't take the money. Like, everything's nice. At one point, he stops a guy who is robbing an old lady.
A junkie. Snatcher.
Yeah, junkie. And he remembers the kid that he put into a coma.
Traction. I don't know what that comic they are referencing. Amazing Spider-Man Family
Amazing
Number
Spider-Man
3.
Spider-Man Family Number Whatever 3. You'd have to see where right near the beginning, it seems that he didn't know his strength and punched a guy. And then they may have then expanded this to show that this kid was hurt. I don't know if they showed it in the original, but he did end up punching a guy and realized that I don't know my own strength. So he can't fight this guy, but he's really mad because this guy pulls a gun on him. It's like Uncle Ben. He's getting triggered, but he can't do it. So, again, there's some things going on that are nice enough, but it just feels like you're just being told old stories instead of it feeling like you're in the story itself. And it's the narration. It's really the narration, because then we get Harry. Harry is dating Gwen. Norman comes out and's like, you know, later on, baby, we're going to have kids, but they'll wipe them out. Like, damn that Nick Spencer. But you end up where he's really like, Norman comes out and he's hugging and rubbing on Gwen Stacy.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, he's touching her cheeks and stuff.
Gwen's mom's sick. And then Harry says, well, my mom's dead. I think he's trying to one up her. It's like, well, my mom's dead. And like, oh, Harry, that's fine. And then Norman comes out and says, listen, I told your dad, anything you need, money's no object, I will help out. And then you have Harry, thanks, Dad, you're the best. Who asked you, kid? He like is ready to backhand Harry because he said he's a great guy. And then they go off, and it's like everything's a whirlwind. You just go from scene to scene. But again, I like the art. It's nice enough. You get to see Gwen stick up for herself at a party. Then you get the proto-goblin who's after Harry, comes to get Harry. I want Harry Osborn. you figure that at this point, we've gotten the idea that it is because of what Norman did to him. You know, he's going to grab Harry's kid.
Yeah,
you let my kid, I'll take yours, you know, that sort of thing. But we find out at the end it's a little more than that. But Spider-Man fights the proto-goblin. At one point, he's afraid to fight back. Harry thinks that Spider-Man's bad because of the papers. It's okay. It's an extended scene, though. It really does go on for a while. But then in the meantime, you do end up having Peter, you know, get beat up a bit. He allows the proto-goblin to beat him up because he doesn't want to hurt him. He's afraid to hurt him. He punches him one time and thinks that he actually crippled him. So he runs
over. He's like, hey, are you all right, giant monster?
Hey, giant monster, red guy, are you okay? I am, and I'm going to beat the crap out of you more.
Yeah, and I'm not going to fight back anymore.
Yeah, because then he doesn't want to fight back, which is odd. Yeah. Or even lead him away because he is.
He's doing millions of dollars in damage.
Proto-goblin, if he's not paying attention to Peter, he goes after Harry.
Uh-huh.
So he's like, oh, so we find he goes back. Aunt May sees that Peter's beat up. I swear to God, it looks like in one panel that Aunt May is about to slap the crap out of Peter.
She pulls her arm back.
Yeah, well, she pushes his hand off of her shoulder.
But
the way it looks when you see it, you just see that it's like, I'm going to slap you silly.
She's going to haul off and wing him.
And they're both, it's because they're not talking about Uncle Ben's death. They're making up jokes and things like that, that they're not really talking. Aunt May's very stressed.
Yeah.
So it is this whole thing, really, I mean, if you go, it's kind of lost a bit in the translation with all the narration, but it is about families. It really is. It's Peter and Aunt May trying to figure out how they're going to go forward with Uncle Ben dead. You end up having Harry and Norman, that Norman just thinks it's a weakness to show that he loves his son. We have Gwen Stacy, and her mom's sick. And we have the proto-goblin who's lost his family because of what Norman's did. So it's all these family type things. I think it might get better. I don't mind this. I think it could be pretty good. That narration, though, has got to stop. You got to lay back. But at the end, to go with the family deal, too, you end up seeing the proto-goblin. Niels comes back to this run-down, crappy apartment, whatever. And he's missing his family. I want my family back. And that's where you see the person step out of the shadows. Luckily, she says a little more because I had no idea who it was. And she's like, oh, you need to finish this job. You need to get Harry. You need to get my son. And then you're like, oh, my goodness. And at that point, you have Harry's like looking at things, Norman and all that, looking at, you know, the place. So she's alive and she wants Harry, probably just to screw with Norman. And it's probably some other wackiness going on.
It's probably like, I don't know. Clone or something.
Some weird thing. Whoever. Or
but she's been dead forever, basically,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So maybe we'll see some weird stuff going on or what it was. But yeah, I like the art. I think the story might be cool. But at this point, it still feels like I said, you're just being told, hey, this is what happened before. You're going to fill in a little blanks, but it doesn't feel as cool or necessary as some of the other things like this were. But you know, it is what it is. What would you give it?
Yeah, I since you're going for an old school feel, I would have went with thought bubbles rather than a lot of the narration. I think that would have been cool to do.
But there's so many, and Peter isn't in all the scenes. That's what the weird. You know what I mean? Like
yeah,
half the time he's not even in the scene, and you're getting.
It's one of my biggest pet thieves. Narration boxes. Just you already have the art. You have the dialogue. That's enough. Set the scene. Let it do its thing. And because of that, I mean, I do like the art. I like the story overall, I think. I'd give it a 7.5.
I'm still giving it a 7.
Interested
I still liked it. Here's the problem, too. And it's a weird play. Because, like you said, usually the narration box is there. And you're like, dude, just let the art tell.
Mm-hmm.
But the weird thing about most of the narration is Peter just kind of repeating, man, I was upset then. Or, man, you thought I should take the money. Well, I wouldn't take it now. Like, it's all this, like, oh,
yeah.
Man, I was sad.
I'm proud of Norman or Harry or whoever.
Like, as he's telling the story, but it doesn't feel like, it doesn't
I
feel
I was
right.
Lucky. I am proud.
Yeah, that's what it all is. Even at the one point, he's like, I wish I could have helped more. And hey, this was constructive. I'm looking at every page where violence, it's been part and parcel of my life. Like,
it's
you don't
horrifying.
Really need that. You don't really need that sort of thing. Just tell the story and then maybe a bookend of him saying, well, you know, I was a little upset at that point. Like, it's fine when he's saying, when him and Aunt May are making jokes and in the narration he's saying, we just couldn't talk about Uncle Ben, so we did this. That's fine. But when you're doing the scenes, I think when Peter isn't in them. And even at one point, he's narrating at a point because you're telling this, oh, I didn't even know them here, but I would know them. So, like, it's just too much. But yeah, seven, though, I still liked it. It's just, it kind of got
me. Yeah, I like
me.
When and these older writers, and I think you do, come back and do stuff.
And that's why I wanted to like it more. Is really why I was a little frustrated with that. It's just, I think that this could be really cool. And again, I mean, we hardly have any spider books lately, right?
So no. Few and far between.
Yeah, it's, you know, but maybe this will be something cool for people to jump on. And I know that I believe because the big thing, Jam DeMatteis, the Kraven's Last Hunt deal, he ended up doing that little bit. He's been doing some of the back in the day stuff too. So hopefully it works out. Hopefully people like it. Maybe people aren't going to be so caught. I'm telling you, it really, I'm caught up in that deal. It's at a point where it was just too much. But that is that. You are done for the week. You can
go off and
maybe next week we will have some cool things. But at least we like this last one. I'm going to go off and talk to Zach about the Vengeance of the Moon Knight to finish this all up. And we will finish this up with The Vengeance of the Moon Knight, number 4, written by Jed McKay, art by Alessandro Capuccio, colors by Rachel Rosenberg, letters by VC's Corey Petit. I am here with my man, Zach. What up, Zach?
What's up, Jim?
What's up? And I have to say, unlike what everybody, you know, ended up saying when we reviewed the last issue, this is an ongoing series. I just want to point that out to everybody that they're wrong and we were right, right? I think that's how it was. We actually, me and you both, went by Comixology.
Never
that
again.
Listed it. Yeah, I mean, people are probably laughing that we did in the first place, but we did go, so we apologize if we confused anybody saying that it was a 5-issue mini. But yeah, never again. We will not end up checking that because this is an ongoing for now. Isn't everything an ongoing for now?
Yeah.
And it will be tying into Blood Hunt. And it's weird because at the end of this issue, you end up to be continued. And then I said to you, oh, I think it's, you know, probably going to go to Blood Hunt. I'm surprised you didn't set anything up. And you said, no, I think issue number 6 is the Blood Hunt, which would make sense when we get to the reveal. And then I look at issue 5 just to see what the solicit is right away. Blood Hunt tie-in. And I'm like, I think that might be a spiritual tie-in to then, as you said, make last page or something like that as they try to work things through. But with the cliffhanger ending reveal here, I don't know what you tie into, if there's a team, it's a weird play to try to figure out how this book will continue if it continues, you know, long form with the reveal. We'll get to it in a minute because there's not that much going on in this issue. Yes, we talked about it last episode that we talked on this issues or on this book that we thought were either going to get 8-Ball or Hunter's Moon doing therapy. We get Hunter's Moon. I laughed about 8-Ball. We get Hunter's Moon. And yeah, he's talking to Dr. Sturman. And Dr. Sturman is giving the, well, tell me how you really feel. Tell me how you really feel. And while it's going on, you do have Hunter's Moon, like, name dropping things that I kind of was confused about. Like, okay, I get it. He says, when I fought this different Moon Knight, he had a fighting style that I recognized. It's this Cold of Kali back in the day. And also, for people who don't know the character, you don't get tons, but the idea that he's died multiple times, comes back. That's what the Fist of Khonshu does. But he's at the end of that line. If he dies again, he dies. As Drago said in Rocky IV, if he dies, he dies. That's what I thought. And with all that, though, It's still not that interesting. You actually liked, I think, the therapy part more than I did.
A little, just a little.
It ends up where, okay, we get it. You're going through these feelings. But what ends up happening in this is maybe bigger for other people. I don't mind Hunter's Moon. He's not my favorite character. I mean, unfortunately for
me. Spoiler alert, Jim, he's mine.
My favorite character in this book, I hate this, was Mark. It was actually Moon Knight. My second is Tigress. So. I'm telling you, Hunter's Moon definitely comes in before Soldier. He's a dumb, but,
yes.
You know, so in that, I'm more of a Mark guy, so everything is kind of, you know, kind of against me here. But it is kind of interesting him talking about the idea of his past lives coming back, the Fist of Khonshu. It was kind of a cool thing when he was first introduced to go Mark's like, but I'm the Fist of Khonshu.
There's two fists, Mark. I love that so much.
That was great. That's the best thing, I think, that Jed MacKay did in this whole series to figure that out. I thought that was really cool. But in this, it's the idea where Sternman is saying, are you mad about Mark not being the new Moon Knight? Are you mad that somebody's taken his place or took his place? Or are you upset that somebody has assumed the role of the Fist of Khonshu? And there's like that semantics there, because in my mind, you know, but I'm not Hunter's Moon. I'm not a Fist of Khonshu. To me, as a reader, I think of those as one and the same. The idea, if you're mad about one, you would be mad about the other, but it would make sense that Hunter's Moon actually then comes to admit, I really don't care about it not being Mark. I just feel like this is a dupe. It's a guy who does not deserve what I died for over and over and over again. So you have all that. Now, in that, you even said to me beforehand, like, and I'll kind of tie in the idea of, well, how would you know and what would happen if somebody showed up and said, hey, by the way, Khonshu made me the Fist of Khonshu. Like, we could find out that the Shroud ends up saying, hey, you know what?
Khonshu chose me.
I got a hold of Khonshu in the Asgardian prison. He chose me. And then how does that change things? Or you told me that you would think it would be cool where Khonshu's kind of pissed off. Like, hey, I got two fists, right? Why isn't anybody breaking me out of prison?
Exactly.
So when he sees Mark die, he's like, I'm going to get somebody who could do some of the work here and get going. And maybe that could have been, and maybe that'll be.
I hope that's what it is.
Yeah, we have to find out. And as this goes, I'll just reveal the spoiler alert. We find out that the Shroud ends up being the new Moon Knight. I'm not going to say the new Fist of Khonshu, because that would get Hunter's Moon. Vader would be pissed at me, and I don't need him
mad at himself.
He's the new Moon Knight. We'll have to see what that means in the Fist of Khonshu. I just think that what happens here is that Vader's upset because he was always the left fist. Now he thinks he should be the right fist, but then this other guy comes in. He's like, I don't want... So ridiculous.
I should be
like
the dominant fist. Why is he the dominant fist?
What's going on?
Now?
I'm the fist that wipes the butt. I don't need that. Let's get going. But they're going, and the whole thing is the mission to go and find definitely who this Moon Knight is just going to be Tigra and Hunter's Moon. He says that they left, you know, Reese, Soldier, and I like Reese more than Soldier, too. I just want to point out. And with that, I think of 8-Ball as kind of like a mascot. You know what I mean? He's like, he's not fully like part of the I think of him as like a given type of mascot there. So you have 8-Ball watching Reese and Soldier, while Tigra and Hunter's Moon go off, and they go, and you made me laugh because you said they're going to the place that we would never look, you know, to figure out who might have replaced Mark, you know, after Mark died.
You know, the place he died?
There might be evidence, right?
Yeah, well, it's just like, we didn't want to look there because we didn't think anybody's there. It's like, well, you didn't know at first that Mark Spector, whether or not he was alive, dead, you didn't know. You should have gone back and looked.
Like, the minute that he came, that you thought it was him. Yeah, it felt weird that he beat up and pretty much just destroyed 8-Ball. But when you go there, I get that they don't want to go back to where they might be upset, but that doesn't tie into what Hunter's Moon just said, that he really doesn't care about Mark not being Moon Knight. He's upset more about the Fist of Khonshu. So he's almost playing off that he doesn't really care that much about Mark. So they go back to the mount to check this out. It's a weird progression of a scene, and this whole issue feels a little stretched out to get to what is supposed to be a big reveal, because you have the therapy going on while you then have Tigra and Hunter's Moon talking about security measures, talking about the idea that there's no electricity, so everything's battery powered. And that Tigra, she knows because of her kids and all their gadgets, where Hunter's Moon doesn't understand it. And I'm like, really? Like, this is what we're worried about. Like, we're doing that. And it's not a lot, but it's still half a page.
Well, it don't matter anyway, because they just charge in there no matter what.
They end up charging in. So they don't, like, what I thought they were going to do is just take the batteries out of this thing, or kind of come up with a cool idea of this is what messes up batteries, and, you know, but no. And really what it is, hey, get this. The security is battery operated. So there's no electricity, and they can, and then it ends with Tigra says, okay, well, like Mark said, I want them to see me coming. which could be sexy.
I mentioned that earlier.
I saw you mentioned that in the Slack. I'm like, it could be sexy, actually.
I still
Google. So it would be like me and you going on and on about the security measures, and then I just, you know, Leroy Jenkins it, because I say, I don't care. I'm just going to go in. There you have it. They go in. And that's where you see where, while, you know, this new Moon Knight isn't Mark, also not living the greatest life. I'm like, I have seen squatters in crack dens who have better surroundings, like laying on the floor with this little sensor. Oh, no, it looks like somebody has broken in. And he's like, OK, that's pretty cool. They're down with it. And then it's like sensor 8 goes, sensor 6. But again, that really doesn't matter. They're just running into fights. So you end up having a big fight. And you have Hunter's Moon versus this Moon Knight, who ends up being the Shroud, like we said. But some of the art, which I do like the art, it does get a little bit confusing following who's who and who's saying what. At one point, I actually did think that they were talking opposite each other. And I'm, oh, that was this other one. Okay. And this whole thing is the Cult of Kali. I recognize you. You're part of, you know, the Cult of Kali. And he's like, well, I used to be. And then we have this big fight. And then Tigra realizes, oh, my God. And now she realized, oh, my God, you peppered up my nose so that I couldn't smell you because I know you. Hey, Max, reveal yourself. Boom. The Shroud. He ends up taking off the, you know, the mask deal, the Shroud even. And it's the Shroud. And I think that's all really this kind of is. And if you're not familiar with the Shroud, which I don't know that a lot of people will, and I'm not even sure that if you know the Shroud, that this is going to be a wow moment. Maybe people will say, well, it makes sense because he's kind of a Batman slash the Shadow, maybe with a little Iron Fist mixed in that you even saw. But that would make sense because Moon Knight's kind of that as well. He ended up being part of the Night Shift that he formed. There's some connection there, but the big thing is West Coast Avenger, things like that. And he is at points a villain that was also a hero. I get it. I get the idea, but I don't think of it as this, oh my God. Like when I read the end, I looked at this where she says, hey, Max, you know, or should I call you the Shroud? I'm like, all right. At least we found out, and let's see. But I think the big play here is to see where we go from here. Is this going to be something where they accept him as the Moon Knight? Is he actually kind of a Fist of Khonshu? Can you play that game? Or is this just where they're like, no, 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 you suck, and we're going to try to find Mark? Or maybe he's trying to. I don't know.
Is this where they're going to form the new Night Force?
Yeah, and when you say all this, it's like, the reveal is the reveal, but I really do have to see what comes next. This isn't a wow moment for me personally, so I have to see how it develops from here. But I did say that they needed to reveal who this was, and they did. They did it the next issue. Somebody even told me, so I'll give credit where credit's due there. But in my mind, this had almost the same exact reaction for me is when, even with the spoilers out there, but if I hadn't had them, the idea that the Hood is the new Ghost Rider. See, I think that now these two smack butts should hang together. It's like, hey, you know, they're just sitting there talking like, man, Hood, you're pretty cool as a Ghost Rider. He's like, why doesn't anybody care? It's like, I don't know. Nobody cares about me, the Shroud, being the Moon Knight. I mean, it just feels like these books end up doing this where it's such a lesser version or a lesser option that, come on, just get Mark.
You're forgetting our favorite guy, Joe Garrison. He can join them.
Yeah, Joe Garrison. Exactly. What are we doing?
What are we doing, Marvel? Why are we replacing everybody with lesser versions of themselves?
With the West Coast knockoffs, we can call them, right? We could call East Coast. I don't care where they are. They are kind of knockoffs. And I can understand what they were trying to do with Joe Garrison. It was such a bad book and a failure. But I don't get what you're doing with this or even the Ghost Rider stuff. And yeah, I'd love to hear if anybody else, when they read this, is that impressed. I just ended up where it's what I think that Jeb McKay does a lot. There's nothing completely wrong with the issue. The dialogue's okay. I think that the pacing is always a little bit off. You know, you don't get a ton of stuff in the slow pace, but just by the end, it's just the whole thing just kind of like, eh. I just like shrug and like, okay, let's see what's next. That was the problem I had with the regular Moon Knight series when I dropped it at one point. Because I just kept getting to ends of issues going, okay, that was okay. wasn't great, but you know, nothing wrong. But I need more than that. I need more. And now this is going to go off into the whole, you know, blood hunt, whether or not, as we think, it's going to be the last page next issue. But then it hits the main deal. And I'll probably, I don't know. I don't even know what we're going to do with reviews. If we're going to review all of the issues. I hate to not review every issue of something, but there's so many damn issues. I don't know if we can do it. Right? So it's almost like if you can't do them all, then you just bail. I don't know. We'll see. But what would you give this?
I think I'm going to be a little generous this time. I think I'm going to do 5.5. The reason I'm doing that is just because I do think that this could be cool to some people. I don't know how many, but that I like about this issue is the stuff with the therapy. I know you said you didn't like
it.
But the main reason I liked it was just because it's like, he's the most interesting out of all of them, in my opinion.
Yeah, you like him. And you I got a little bit. And the idea that he could die now, he said that.
Yes,
that's at the
that
end of the
I did like.
That's very interesting. That's the most interesting. That's the real big reveal in this, not the shroud. That. And I've even talked, and I know that when we review things, we're doing our own personal opinions. I'm actually going to be way more positive than you.
Oh, wow.
It's so crazy.
Oh, wow.
I'm at 6'5". I'm not that crazy. I'm 1 point over, but I like the art. And
yeah,
I like Tigra. I like, you know, that we did get a reveal, though it was kind of a shrug my shoulders reveal. But I do have to think, too, because sometimes you get in this, like, you know, kind of a, how am I saying it, an insulated area where you don't realize that a lot of people jumped on this book and didn't know, say, a Hunter's Moon. My man, I talked to a guy, Lane, he doesn't know these characters. So the therapy has actually been really good to catch him up. But I said, unfortunately, it's all kind of repeat, some of it, but this one had that big reveal, so I can go with that. But yeah, 6.5 for me.
I think that's the highest you give in this series.
Yeah, I think I'm being very positive, but I did say I needed them, Jeb McKay, to get to a reveal, and he did. So I'm going to give props for that.
Yeah, he did. I'll give him credit.
And, I mean, I don't know, besides pulling the mask and maybe thinking that, oh my God, this has to be the shroud, pull the mask and it's Mark. Now, that
would have been cool.
I don't know any other reveal that I would have liked anyway. You know what I mean? If all of a sudden, that'd be funny. It's like, it's Johnny Blaze. And he's like, I'm not the Ghost Rider anymore. I got to do something. Like, I don't know what
else. Oh, my God,
else.
It's Frank Castle.
Exactly. Or he pulls. That would have been cool. He pulls. I think I said that at one point. He pulls the mask off and it ends up being Bader himself looking at it. You know, I don't know. I don't know what would have impressed me more. But I kind of just want Mark. But if they would have pulled it and it's like, oh, it's Mark, I probably would have bitched at that, too. So
yeah,
I don't really know what I could have gotten anyway. But here we are. I want to see what it means. I want to see where we go from it.
I had told you off air before we got on here, I had said something. There's a page in here where Hunter's Moon is talking about, oh, I recognize, you know, the fighting style.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, he's like, oh, like 200 years ago, there was this cult that had that fighting style. And, you know,
yep, we
even see
it. Kalik.
And I had told you, I was like, well, what if the Fist of Khonshu had resurrected Mark, but instead of bringing, like, Mark's personality back, he brought back one of the original Moon Knights. Or
and
one
I
of
thought
the
it
old-
was just going to be a very violent personality that may be a combo, something that was repressed more or whatever. But, you know, this is what we get. So we'll see. We'll see what they do.
It could have been a possessed, Khonshu somehow put his consciousness inside Mark's dead body.
I don't know
body.
What he can do with being in prison. Again, that kind of is where I don't know.
When has
characters.
That stopped anybody,
well,
Tim?
That's the other thing, though, too. And not knowing Hunter's Moon, like what he really can is the idea, would he be able to tell that this is a Fist of Khonshu just from him? Like, oh, Khonshu would have gotten a hold of me, or I'd know. It's a weird play. But you have the shroud, and he looks very pissed off at the end.
Well, he just screams, and is like, why are you screaming?
He's just yelling. Yeah, he's a guy who screams a lot, but we'll see. But that is that. So I did like it more than the last issue. So at least we got the reveal heading off to Blood Hunt. It's crazy. But we'll see how that is. But thanks for joining me.
No problem, as always.
And I'm going to go off now and let everybody know what dandy books we're going to have next week. All right, everybody. And that is it for this week's show. But let me tell you what we will be talking about next week. And as I always say, some of these may not end up on the show, but we also may add a couple others as well. But these are what I think would be the safe bets. Amazing Spider-Man number 47. See what that is all about when we get to that one. I'll tell you, it says here that after the events of Web of Spider-Man number 1, Chasm is on the loose. Spider-Man better track down his erstwhile clone and Hallows Eve ASAP, or as people say, ASAP. We're getting close to Amazing Spider-Man number 50. Yeah, yeah, that we are. That we are. And I don't know what the idea is. Like, hey, everybody, we're getting close to Amazing Spider-Man number 50. So what we'll do here at 47 is just have Chasm and Hallows Eve, as they were kind of just let out of the limbo embassy prison because, yeah, you know, you end up having Madeline Pryor say, I don't really want to be a warden. So you let him go. Let the boy run is what happened there. But it gets us closer to the big deal. I believe it is the Steve Fox written Chasm / Kane book that, you know, I'm interested to see how that will end up. But moving on from there, we have, it seems like we just got Incredible Hulk number 10, but we have Incredible Hulk number 11 coming up this week. So we'll be talking about that. I hope that this issue, well, actually, I kind of know that this issue is going to be Frozen Charlotte. We end that little three-parter. Please, we need to get things going. And I'm saying please to Philip Kennedy Johnson, who I really, really like. And I think he's a great guy and all of that. Just please, I don't want to have to drop the book. But it's really not doing much. In the solicit, it actually says, Eldis makes another tempting offer to Bruce Banner. Like, come on. Do something. Do something here. And then the last one, because there's a ton of Star Wars books we're not talking about. Obviously, a ton of X-Men as that is wrapping up. But not really anything in between for us on the show. Except for a book that's very polarizing, a book that I like the first issue. A lot of people didn't. A lot of people told me that I'm a sucker for liking the first issue. But I, you know, that's the thing. If I'm going to be a sucker, might as well be a sucker in a positive way of liking Ultimate X-Men. This is Ultimate X-Men number 2. So we'll be talking about that and see how that goes. With all that, that's it. That's the three books, but we may mix something in, as I said. But that is it. And, oh, also, actually, I think there is something I see we'll mix in. Symbiote Spider-Man 2099 number 2, the Peter David Symbiote Spider-Man 2099 deal. We enjoyed the first issue. So, yeah, that'll be on there as well. So, see, if I keep hanging out, look at this. No, there's no others that I see with my eye spy, but who knows. But with all that, thanks, everybody, again, for listening. And if you like what you hear, you can go and check us out on Twitter at WeirdScienceDC. You follow us, we'll follow you back. You could also go to our website, WeirdScienceMarvelComics.com. Check out our YouTube channel, Weird Science Comics. And then last but not least, you can go over and help us out for everything we do and go to our Patreon, patreon.com/WeirdScience, where we have a ton of shows, Marvel, DC, indie, manga, everything. So check that out. And if you go now, you can even get a free 7-day trial where you can check out a ton of shows scot-free, as they say, and then decide by the end if it's for you. But I think we have enough stuff there to maybe pique your interest. So go check that out. All of the things that I just said are in the show notes. There'll be click and clacks in there. So with all that, though, thanks, everybody, and I'll talk to you all later.
You are all weirdos.
Weird science is the revolution. Weird science is the revolution.